Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you for the next 2 hours. And of course, being Wednesday and Community Connections, we're here to tell you about what's going on in our neighbourhood. And today we've got two interviews. We've got Ross with me from each, and then at 1 o'clock I'll have... we've got Lorraine from Eastern Health, Metal Block there. But first of all, I'd like to say hello to Ross from Each. How are you, Ross?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you, Matt?
I'll need you to get closer to your microphone, please, yep. Ross.
Yeah, can you hear me okay now?
No. Can you get any closer?
Let me see. Is that any better, mate?
No, you're still... you're still fairly quiet. Well, anyway, we'll keep going and see how we go. Now, Ross, it's a time of the month where we have got Each in us, and we keep reminding people that it is spelt the normal way of Each, E-A-C-H. Ross, we're talking particularly about the lockdown is at the moment, and I believe that you're very involved with the mental health side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been working all through the lockdown down here at the service that I work for. Oh, can you hear me okay now, mate?
Yeah, I need you to get as close as that as you can, please, for the listeners to hear.
Yeah.
All right. So, look, while we acknowledge people have got there is mental health issues, and we're not going to shy away from that, we also, before we go today, want to give some people maybe some strategies to help them through. So, first of all, Ross, just let me ask you how long you've been with Each.
Yeah, so I've been working for Each for the last 2.5 years.
Terrific. And your expertise is mainly in mental health?
Yeah, that's correct. I've worked a little bit in sort of the homelessness and housing space as well, but mental health is where most of my experience is.
Yeah. Across the broad range of ages, not just youth?
Yeah, most of my experience is with young people, so sort of that 16 to 25 age band, but I've worked with adults as well, like older adults.
Right. And of course, at the moment, I mean, we'd be fooled not to admit that people are doing it very hard. I think some people... the first lockdown we went through, they found it reasonably easy. And then, of course, last year we went through that really long, protracted one. And, of course, people, I think, thought that we were getting out of it. And then we've been back into it a couple of times this year. So how have you finding, well, particularly as you're dealing with mainly young people, how are you finding they're coping this year?
I think this year's been harder than last year, for sure. I've still been, like, really impressed with the sort of resilience that a lot of the young people we work with have shown. They've managed, like, a lot better than I would honestly have expected, considering, you know, not being able to get out and about, cut off from a lot of usual community connections. But that said, yeah, definitely this last couple of lockdowns over the last few months have seemed to hit harder than they did last year in terms of mental health impact.
Well, I guess we're all, I don't know what you'd call us, but we're all... animals or whatever that we thrive on each other, don't we? We just don't. Very few of us like isolation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one reason why the young people in our setting. So I work in a residential service where the young people live on site. So there's kind of natural community connections there, and there's other young people living with them. They're seeing staff every day, so I think that's helped a lot. But even that, you know, has its limits. There's only so many Zoom meetings that people can put up with before they get a bit sick of it.
So. You've actually got a residential facility, have you? Where's that, Ross?
So we've got two through Each. So we've got one based out of Wanturna down near Knox City, and we've got one that I work at in Box Hill. And so each of those has about 10 young people living on site. They live here for a year.
And they're there sort of 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or it's not just a day drop? No, it's not a drop-in centre. They're there residential all the time?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just like, it's a block of houses, so it's just like living in a share house environment, but there's also staff on site for support if needed.
How do the young people become involved in Each? Like, how do they get into this housing?
Yeah, so usually most of our referrals come from other sort of supports they have in their lives, whether that's, you know, GPs, family members, psychologists, that sort of thing. People can self-refer to us, but that's less common, I'd say. But absolutely, it's an option.
Do you get any through the courts?
Not that I've encountered so far. Not to say that we couldn't, but we wouldn't be like somewhere that someone would be referred as like part of a court sort of like, you know, treatment plan or parole or whatever it might be.
Yep. So of it. Well, you're saying that, that they're referred to by you know, parents and all sorts of people.
Mm.
So what sort of people are you getting coming to you, and sort of how long is their normal length of stay with you?
Yeah, so we support people for up to 12 months, and most people stay for that full 12 months. That's generally, sometimes people will choose to leave early, or sometimes things don't work out and they need to leave a bit earlier, but usually we see them stay for that full 12. And we usually see in people who just are finding that, like, quite often because we're working with young people living in the family home with parents isn't working out for one reason or another, and they need that extra level of support. It might be, and usually it's building towards living independently after staying with us, so, you know, finding a place in a share house with some mates or finding their own place if they've got, you know, enough income to be able to manage that.
Do you find that with the referrals or however they get to you, we're talking about mental health now, do they have more than one problem? Like, do they involve, is it just that they're finding hard to cope with society, or do some of them have multiple problems?
I think, honestly, in the whole time I've worked in mental health, I've never found someone who just has a mental health problem. It's pretty much always there's a lot going on. Quite often we'll see trauma is a big one. You know, people have had all sorts of traumatic backgrounds, but also things like physical health issues are really common, especially if someone's come from an upbringing where there might have been, say, neglect or something. You know, that's quite likely there'd be some physical health issues we have to follow up. And as well, all sorts of other stuff, you know, like lack of stable employment can be a big one. Youth employment's really tough these days, especially with lockdowns. So quite often a lot of support we're doing there and around getting back in study and that sort of stuff, difficulties at schooling, it's always a big mixed bag.
Yeah. So do you get many sent to you from the courts?
No, it's not something I've encountered. Not to say it couldn't happen, but it's not something that's come up in the couple of years that I've been working here.
So it's more people either deciding they need to do something about it, or, as you say, part of their family that are saying, well, we need to do something about it.
Yeah, because we're a voluntary service, so we've got to have some buy-in from the young person who's coming here. They have to want to engage in our service. Because if they don't, they're perfectly entitled to walk out the door at the end of the day. There's nothing keeping them here.
Oh, so they can.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's fair enough too. How many people would stay the full 12 months out of the amount that you've got?
I'd say probably, like, it's hard to give a ballpark figure, but maybe like 2/3 to 3/4 of the people would stay the full time. Sometimes people choose to leave early because they might have, you know, found that they don't need the support or that might not be enough support for them. Sometimes people need something small, like sort of a clinical, more high needs approach to mental health support.
So how do they sort of get involved with your organisation to start with?
Yeah, so usually the way that we handle things is we get people to just give us a call and see if they're interested first, and we get them to come down, take a look at the place. Obviously at the moment most of that's happening over the internet.
Yep.
But ordinary times we'd get people to come down, have a look at the place, chat to us about what our service actually is and if we're a good fit, and then there's a referral process that they can go through. And I can definitely provide details about how to link in with that later on.
Yeah, we'll certainly do that at the end of the show. So, look, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Here we go. Like I said before, there are times when things don't lay the way they're supposed to lay. But regardless, you're supposed to hold your head up high and walk tall. Walk tall. Talk.
Hi, folks. This is Speedway Bazza. You're listening to the greatest little radio station in the valley, Yarra Valley FM 99.1.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 23 minutes past 12 and 22 degrees. We've just got one more degree, one more degree to go, and we've hit the top of 23 and sunny, down to 13 tonight, 25 tomorrow and sunny. So we're in for a couple of really terrific days. And I have with me Ross from Each down in Lilydale, and we talk about particularly youth mental health. And Ross, apart from the people that are in residence of the two spots you're talking about, you also run an outreach program.
Yeah, that's correct. So it's something that's fairly new. We've only received funding for this in the last couple of months. It's called Yours Youth Outreach Recovery Support. And it's a really similar model of support to what we're giving people who live here. It's just in an outreach capacity. So we've got the workers actually coming out to people's houses or meeting in the community, whatever suits them.
At the moment, are you able to go and visit them in their house, or is it all online?
It's a bit of a mixed bag. Where we can do things online, we generally try to minimise the amount of contact we're having, that sort of thing. But if there's a real mental health need, if someone's not going to be able to engage online, if they need someone to actually come and physically see them, we can do that.
Ross, do you get any references from the police and people like that at all?
Not so much. We do have a bit of connection with some of the like youth resource officers in the local areas, and we do give them information about our services, and they might sometimes recommend service to people, but usually it'll be coming through like clinical services are mainly where our referrals come through, so like the hospital system or like case managers from Eastern Health, that sort of thing.
Oh, so you're working with Eastern Health as well?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah, because we've got Eastern Health coming on in the next hour. Talking about mental health issues as well, out of Healesville. So Lorraine will be on between 1 and 2. So often do you get people referred to you from their family?
Yeah, that happens sometimes. We sometimes find that, you know, things in the family home aren't working so well and people need some extra support. It might be that, like, some young people's mental health symptoms might be making it hard for the family to manage, or it could be that the young person wants support to get out of their family environment because they think their mental health's going to be better if they can live independently. And both of our services can kind of help to meet that need, whether it's residential or outreach.
I was just going to ask you that. What proportion would be referred to by other members of the family as compared to people who... what I'm getting at, is there a reluctance from a particularly young person to admit that there is a mental health problem, or do you find that they're very happy to rock along and say, listen, I've got a real problem, I need help?
I think in our service in particular, usually the young people that we get are far enough along in their mental health recovery, they've kind of got to the point where they definitely recognise that there's issues and they want to work on them. Because if we had someone who was that kind of level of reluctant and not quite ready to open up about things, usually then it's not a good fit for us because we're doing some pretty intensive mental health support work with people and they need to kind of come to the party and be wanting to engage.
Admit that they need help. So you've got people and they're living in these residential care. Just give us a rough idea of what a day would be like to those people. Like, are you with them 12 hours a day, or do they just live in where they are and you just pop in there for a couple of hours a day? So, I mean, what sort of service do you offer to those people?
Yeah, so it's a very independent setup. So most of the time they're left to their own devices. We only even have staff on during daytime anyway. We don't actually have any staff around overnight. So mostly people are left to their own devices. Things they might be doing with us throughout the day, though, are every young person here has a worker who they meet with to, you know, develop some goals, work on strategies to manage their mental health, that sort of stuff. Right. And the other big part of the program is that we have group programs running pretty much every single weekday, where we're getting people into groups to, you know, learn strategies to manage their mental health. Some of our groups are about getting active, like we have a wilderness adventure therapy program, all sorts of stuff. And that's really where I think a lot of the value of the program is building those sort of connections with other young people.
And do you find that, apart from the fact that they're building connections with you, do you find that they're connecting with each other as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really valuable, you know, being around other young people who also have their own mental health challenges and seeing the different ways that people manage building connections. Because quite often the thing that's impacting on people's mental health when they come to us is that they don't have any good relationships in their life. They might have friendships that are really unsupportive or unhealthy. Their family supports might not be going as well as they'd like. So it gives them an opportunity to build healthier support networks.
Do you find many of them come from broken homes where there isn't a peer support or support from a mother and a father? Or do you get, well, do you get, what proportion do you get for those people compared to, say, people who just come in off the street and been living on the street for a while?
I'd say most of the young people we work with generally do come from a family home. It's a bit of a mixed bag. Like, we absolutely do get people coming straight from homelessness or who are already living independently out in the community and just finding it's not working for them, who choose to come into our service. But a lot do come from family environments that are breaking down a bit.
Fair enough. All right, let's go take another quick break and we'll be back with more.
Yarra Valley FM 99.1. Thank you.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 28 minutes to 1. And we've still sitting on 22, looking for 23, and mostly sunny. It's certainly sunny out there today, down to 13 tonight, 25 tomorrow. And I have with me with Ross from Each, and we're talking about particularly youth mental health. Ross, can you just give us a bit of an idea? So somebody comes into your service today, we'll say, if you had a vacancy. What would be the process? Do you work with them intensely to start with and then taper off? So we'll say they're going to be with you for 12 months. Can you give us a rough idea of a case without discussing anyone or whether it's general, how you would go about it and sort of the frequency, whether you start off, you know, really intense or whatever you do. Please, Ross.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can definitely speak kind of broadly about what the journey looks like for most young people. So usually, you're right, we do try to taper things off. The level of support we're offering stays pretty consistent, you know, like we're meeting with people usually once a week pretty consistently. We can step that up if they need extra support. But I'd say over time, the emphasis changes. You know, at the start, we're managing a lot of stuff for young people. We're providing a lot of intensive support to manage, you know, any behaviours, put them at risk, all that sort of stuff. But over time, we're trying to put it back into their hands, give them the skills to cope independently, because we're well aware that, you know, at the end of the 12 months, we're not going to be there to provide as intensive support. So we want people to be able to cope on their own without our support.
And that's really what the service is about, isn't it? To set them up to be able to look after themselves for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, to speak to kind of what we might see at the end of that 12 months is, you know, when people come to us, quite often they're, you know, completely disengaged from, like, education and employment. They might have, like, lots of broken down relationships in their family and their personal life. By the end, quite often we see people finding, you know, employment or education that's really meaningful to them. They're living independently out in private rental in the community. They've often repaired relationships with family or built new ones that are more meaningful to them. Yeah, and once people leave, we provide a bit of sort of tapered off sort of outreach support as well to help ease that transition back into the community, which is also part of what that outreach service I spoke to earlier does.
Ross, when you talk about outreach, how long do you work with a client after, like, they're with you for 12 months, we'll say. So yep. How long do you work with them after they go back out into the what I'd call the big wide world?
Yep. It's pretty variable. We can offer up to 6 months of support, but usually we find people don't need that much. Quite often it's usually like a month or two. Usually it's mostly about, you know, making sure that things are going smoothly with the transition into wherever they're going and maybe setting them up with some new longer-term supports. So, like, quite often we might try to, like, refer someone into a psychologist who can keep working them for a few years less intensively. Yep. And so they can gradually kind of ramp down their support needs over their life.
So you're talking about this outreach service, and that's normally only 6 months after?
Yeah, so I think we generally try to cap it off at about 6 months unless there's, like, a real clear need. Because if people need more support than that, then we'd probably be looking at, you know, linking them in with other stuff that can provide more consistent support.
Right. So do you have any figures as to how successful, like, do most of your people then just, like, they come out of well, I don't want to say the real world, but you know what I mean? Well, the day-to-day world, and they come in to get involved with yourselves. What sort of success do you have, do you know?
I'd say it's hard to put a specific figure to it or anything, but I'd say pretty much every person I've worked with in our service has come out better than they came in. What that looks like for each individual person is very variable. But we do see really successful outcomes. Like, that's one reason I really like my job, is that the amount of change we see in a young person over that year is so much more than I've seen in other jobs, because we do provide such intensive support.
Now, I don't want to go down a sexist line, because that's not what we're here to do, but out of the young people that are presenting themselves, would it be 50-50, or is there more male or more female? And there is a reason behind the question, but go.
I think it's an absolutely fair question. We do tend to see more girls coming through than blokes. And, you know, I think a big part of that is that, you know, there's a lot more stigma against blokes opening up about mental health and that sort of thing. And also, like, you know, admitting that need for, you know, support to live independently can be a lot tougher for blokes. I mean, I'm a bloke. I know how, like, challenging that was when I was younger.
That's the reason for the question. I know it sounds a bit sexist, but the reason for the question was, is there roughly the same amount of people suffering from mental ill health? It's just that the guys are too bravado and I can fix this, you know, I'm a bit of a sis if I admit to it, whereas the girls are more likely to say, put their hand up and say, I need some help?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's definitely the case. I don't think mental health discriminates at all. It's definitely present across both genders you know, I wouldn't be able to quote you any stats off the top of my head, but I think it is, yeah, a matter of that stigma of opening up, and also the way that mental health looks for blokes and girls, especially with young people, can be quite different because, you know, quite often blokes don't open up about their mental health at a younger age. They're not actually accessing support. So, you know, quite often these issues just kind of bubble away until they get into adulthood.
And sort of, I don't know if it's still the same, but when I was growing up, if a guy was having a few problems, they'd just tell him to man up and get on with it, didn't they? Rather than particularly with guys, and I can't talk about women, but I know with guys, if anyone was struggling a bit, everybody just said, it's just been a bit of a sore, get on with it. Well, hopefully we've walked past that a long while, but I'm wondering if there is still a bit of that, not so much stigma against them, but in their own minds.
Yeah, I think it's still a big feature of the society we live in. It's definitely shifted big time. Like, a lot more young blokes are open to talking about their mental illness and just their struggles in general. But there's still a big stigma. It's still absolutely a thing. It's one of the bigger challenges of working with some of the young blokes I work with when we do get male referrals coming through, is, like, working through that and getting them to feel comfortable opening up about the fact that they do have needs just like anyone else.
Well, I guess a lot of us, and I'm quite a bit older than the group you're working with, but we've all been brought up to more or less, well, if you can't make it, it's your problem. It's not so much that the situations, you know, you just got to man up and get on with life, whereas I would have thought that the girls are a bit more, I don't want to say smarter, but I guess they're a bit more tuned on to the fact that, that yes, there are problems and, you know, let's go on and do something about them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other part of that is that for blokes who are struggling, because there is that stigma against accessing, you know, the more productive ways of support, like reaching out to mental health supports, you do get stuff like, you know, people leaning on other behaviours like drug use and stuff to manage, in which case, you know, that can make their mental health worse and they might get to a point where they need a support service that's more intensive than ours, which is also, I think, the other side of that coin is some of the young blokes who do need support just end up having much more intense support needs by the time they're accessing support.
All right, I've just got to take a quick break, Ross, and we'll be back with more.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Just pass Buxton with a long neck between my legs. Coppers up ahead, pray away if you're through. Good luck trying to catch that old dodgy.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 14 minutes to one. Gee, the time goes quick. And we've hit the top for the day of 23 degrees and mostly sunny. And I've got with me Ross from Each down in Lilydale, and we're talking about mental health, particularly for the youth. Ross, you've got some group programs that you run, have you?
Yeah, that's a big part of both our outreach service and our residential service. So part of staying in our residential service especially is agreeing to attend some of these groups. And we got a whole big mix of them. I'd say it's probably one of the most important things about our program. So we've got some groups that focus on more sort of, you know, mental health, psychoeducation type stuff. So, you know, doing like group therapies, looking at strategies to manage anxiety, getting better relaxation, managing moods, working on sleep, that sort of stuff.
Yep.
But it's not all that sort of like intensive mental health stuff. We like to have a bit of fun too. So we've got a lot of exercise focus groups as well, because we recognize that, you know, physical health is actually a really big part of mental health. There's a lot of evidence that backs that up. So we've got outdoor activity groups, we've got yoga groups, we have WILD, which is our wilderness adventure therapy program. So that's getting out into nature, doing rock climbing, whitewater rafting, all that sort of stuff in a way that's framed around, you know, managing anxiety and working towards recovery. We also have some stuff that focuses on sort of life skills. So, you know, we might be doing groups where people are learning, you know, cooking skills, looking at options for housing after they finish with us, supporting people to get back into employment, that sort of stuff. It's a really big mixed bag. So there's kind of something for everyone in the program, which I think is a really valuable part of it.
When you say, like, employment, that you don't run the employment program, though, do you? That, like, you just get them ready. You get them ready.
Yeah, exactly. And we actually have some linkages with some employment providers in the local area who we might get to come down and do pop-up sessions and that sort of stuff for us, so that we can use their expertise, because they know it better than we do.
Oh, fair enough. All right, look, we'll take one more quick break and then we'll be back. And when we come back, we're going to give people all the contact details. And I guess particularly we need to acknowledge today that there'll be quite a few probably grandparents and parents listening. There's probably not all that many young people themselves, but we need to sort of give them a bit of an idea as to how they can get involved. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Am I ever gonna see your face again?
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 8 minutes to one and we've hit the top for 23 degrees, so it'll possibly go a bit higher. But anyway, we've got Ross with me from Each down in Lilydale, and we've been talking particularly about youth mental health. Now, Ross, I'm fairly conscious of the fact that probably not a lot of young people listening to us today, but there's more likely to be the parents and quite possibly the grandparents. So two things. If it is a young person listening to us today, how do they get in contact with you? And if it's a grandparent or a parent, can they refer them to you, or how does that go?
Yeah, so I'd say definitely the young person, regardless of who's touching base with us, whether it's the young person themselves or, you know, a family member, the young person's got to be keen on the service. But that said, sometimes it's easier for a family member to ring up and express interest. Also, they might want to get more info about the service to see if it's a good fit. So best bet is just to call us. That's the easiest thing you can do, is just call us and have a chat, and then we can explain the intake process.
Right, so what's your phone number?
Yeah, so you can reach us on 9890-6833.
Again?
9890-6833.
Yep. Now, do you have a Facebook page or a web page?
Yeah, so probably your best bet is to just jump onto the Each website. And there's information about our residential service, which is called the Integrated Therapeutic Community, and our outreach service, which is called Youth Outreach Recovery Support.
Can you give those again, please?
Yep, so the residential service is Integrated Therapeutic Community. That's ITC, is the initials. And then our outreach service is called the Youth Outreach Recovery Support Service, YORS. And you can find out about both of those on www.each.com.au. And that's just Each, spelled like the word E-A-C-H.
Yeah, there's no full stops or anything with them, just E-A-C-H. No. All in lower capital. Not lower capitals, all in lower case.
Yeah. Yeah, all lowercase.
Ross, how long was the actual program? Sorry, I'll put my teeth back in. How long has Each been running this program?
So this program in particular, I think we're on year 7 now of Each running the service, but there was also like the same service previously was run by another organisation. So I think overall this site's probably been going for over 10 years now.
Oh, that's good. So I guess along the line, you'd have had some really good stories too, wouldn't you? Some really good outcomes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'd say there's definitely pretty much every story is a good one. There's very rarely bad stories. Even if we end up not being a good fit for someone, we at least end up, you know, helping them move towards whatever is a good fit for them in terms of support.
I was just going to ask that. Like if somebody came into your program and we'll say they're living in or outreach, whatever it is, do you often get to the stage where you say, look, we can't help you. You really need either more or less in depth, and then you actually try and encourage them to get involved with another organisation?
Yeah, that happens fairly regularly, I'd say. And yeah, we can support people to link into those other supports. Because the thing is, you know, there's a ton of mental health support out in the community, and the tricky thing is most people just don't know what's out there, whereas we do. It's our whole job to know. So we can definitely give that linkage.
And do you find that goes on, that a lot of the people sort of, do you find that many, it's either just not enough for them or for something like that, or the situation at home resolves itself and back they go?
Yeah, it happens sometimes. I'd say most people who come here do stay out the full 12 months, but sometimes we might find that someone needs more intensive support, or sometimes they might, yeah, find out that they just don't need the level of support we have. And sometimes if they've got, like, you know, a really busy life with work and study and stuff, we might actually be getting in the way more than we're helping.
But do you get many that have got that lifestyle? I mean, are more of your clients on benefits than working, or...
The majority are on some form of Centrelink payment. Yeah, we do get some who are working more lately, like over the last year or so, than we have previously. But, yeah, it's usually still mostly people on, like, Centrelink benefits.
Yeah, because I would have thought a lot, and I should ask you, do a lot of your clients actually have jobs of their own, or a lot of them just not at this moment being able to be employed?
Most of them aren't really ready for employment currently, but some do. Quite often we see people who've got, like, really sort of casual, infrequent work as well, because it's tough as a young person, even without mental health challenges, to find, like, really stable, work that you can actually support yourself with.
And those people that do have jobs, they wouldn't be in your residential situation, would they? They'd be the more of the outreach patients?
Most of the time, but we do get some in our residential setting. It's mostly around, you know, do they need the residential support, and if they can, can they meet the requirements of engaging here while fitting that around work shifts, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
I guess this is probably not a fair question to ask because you might do the administration side. Are you government funded or do you?
So we're funded through the DHHS. The model that we run under is called Youth Residential Rehabilitation. So there's services like ours all over the state. It's not just in the east.
Yep. So I guess the real point of me asking that is it's not as though it's going to cost the young person out of their own pocket or the grandparents or the parents, that there is funding available to keep them in or have them in the residential care.
Yeah, there is a small service fee, but we charge it as like a small percentage of whatever income someone's making. So it's scale. So, you know, it's if someone's only on a centrally payment, they're paying a pretty small amount.
Yeah, because it'd be terrible to keep them out of something they needed just because they had to pay their way, wouldn't it? And very often, you know, ones that can't pay their way.
Yeah, and that service fee as well is only for the residential service. The outreach service is 100% free.
Another quick question, because we are starting to run out of time. I know that you said the age groups you work between. What would be the average age group, though, that you're working with?
Yeah, so we work from 16 to 25. That's our eligibility criteria. Most are kind of in the middle of that. We don't get many people under 18. We do get a few. And we don't get many people who are kind of in their, like, mid-20s. It's usually, you know, kind of that 18 to 22-ish sort of ballpark.
Is it once you get over up towards 25, there are other agencies available, or is it...?
Yeah, so it's mostly just usually when someone's at that older end, because the way the mental health service system is structured, after 25 you access adult mental health services rather than youth mental health services. Yep. So when someone's getting further on in their age, it might be seen that adult stuff's more appropriate.
So it's not really a case of them being kicked out of the system as they get older. It's more a case of there are other alternatives for them, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, because youth services are really designed around being appropriate for people who are at that kind of early developmental stage and that sort of stuff. So yep.
After all, it is youth services. Ross, look, I've got to go, unfortunately. The 1 o'clock news is here. Thank you for your time. And we wish you well. And if anybody that's listening today needs your service, please get involved with EACH. Thank you very much, Ross.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.